PodNuts wants to thank everyone who supports the network by going to www.podnuts.com/Amazon.
Hey everybody, welcome to Geeksters episode 140. This is a show where we talk about all things geeky. If it has a computer in it, at some point, we're probably going to talk about it. I'm Martin Obando, one of the hosts here. Let me introduce my other host. Yeah, I didn't say hosts, just host. Hey Tim, how's it going?
Hey man, it's going good, buddy. Glad to be here. We're, as you said, it's host co-host singular. We are without our Mitch tonight. He just feeling a little under the weather, so get well, Mitch. And yeah. But I'm doing good, buddy. It's good to be here with you, man, and everybody in the chat, of course. Ready to get this thing on.
Yeah, we were able to push it back just a little bit tonight. So everybody joining us live, we're almost 2 hours shifted back, but it worked well for both Tim and myself, our schedule. So here we are, ready to hang out a little bit later, but you know, that's all right.
That's 2 extra hours of content.
That's right, 2 extra hours. It means we're going to have to end on time because I'll be hungry. I know it's probably after your dinner time, but I haven't eaten yet.
Yeah, well, our show will be what? What's that work out to? Like maybe 3% better? I mean, what's 2 hours over the course of a week? I don't know.
Sorry. This is like 2.5%.
2.5%?
Yeah. What did you have for dinner, though? Because I don't have any ideas what I'm having yet.
I had Chinese.
Oh, that sounds good.
The food, I mean. Chinese food. And I don't even know what it is. I'm not a big fan of Chinese food, but my wife just puts it in front of me. She knows what I like and what I don't like. So well, she just gets it and she just puts it there. And I just eat it. Actually, that's the way most meals go, I admit.
Hands you a fork, a knife, and she just puts something in front of you, and the next thing you know, it's gone.
Fork and knife optional. I mean,
just shake the bowl in front of you.
It literally could be Soylent Green. It's just fuel. It's just fuel to me. I'm not much, you know, I'm not a connoisseur of fine anything. So,
yeah,
big surprise, right. I'm sure, to most people.
Well, I don't know what we're having yet. We'll figure it out. But so, how'd your week go? I mean, we're back to back. We have a pattern already. There's a trend with us being back on schedule.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, but Mitch isn't here, so it's still like not right.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's fine. Still nothing real exciting to bring up. I have a Xbox or a PlayStation or something I get to tear into later. But I don't know what the deal is with that. And I don't know. I had a pretty good call. Nice guy, friend of mine that I know. He had a computer and he said that he was getting a code for a failed hard drive. And so I said, well, all right. So we kind of worked. I asked him a few questions. You know, where are you getting this code and what is it? And so I was glad to learn that it wasn't a failed hard drive. It was a failing hard drive. You know, there's literally a world of, I mean, neither's good, but there's a world of difference between the two.
Yeah.
If the thing is still spinning, that's something we could probably do something with. And the BIOS was recognizing it. So I don't have it here and I'm not even sure what he wants to do with it, but, it was a reminder to me, just working with people on the phone and how, you know, that I guess same as if I called somebody for a water heater, this is what it's doing. I don't know what that is, but a few leading questions and in their mind, they can already see this is what it needs and this is what it is. And so, you know, he's pretty savvy, you know, around the computer and doing everything, but he's not a hardware guy. And so, I asked a few questions and it was like, it went from very, very grim to very, very, hey, maybe we can do something about this. But, you know, the instructions were, don't do anything. I mean, he said it would get to the point where when you get the Windows splash screen, but then it couldn't go any further and it was noisy. I said, you just shut it down, pull the cord, and don't touch it until you make a decision because, we need to rescue that data off of there. And you don't know if you've got 5 minutes or 5 months. You know, you right. Literally don't know what's going on inside there. So you just kind of assume that you have a very, very short amount of time left and you want to make the most of it. So, yeah, I don't have that one here yet, but I always enjoy those because it's such a dire situation. It's almost like when you were driving that ambulance, you know, you don't know. You just don't know how much time you have. It's not like, you know, you get a machine in and it just, Maybe it needs a video card upgrade or, you know, some RAM or something that it works, but it's just not at working as well as it could. I mean, this is like an emergency 911, you know, time is of the essence, you know, the clock is ticking and, you know.
I need a hard drive recovery tool stat.
I mean, there's like in your mind, in my mind, there's this like clock just ticking down, but they're all like algebraic variables. I mean, there's no numbers. I don't know what it is. And it's just counting down and down and down. And so, I guess there's a geeky level of excitement to that you just don't know. I think that maybe because I've had a lot of success, it seems like I had one or two where I couldn't get most of the stuff off. I had one that just, you know, died immediately, but there's so much opportunity for success in a situation where, failure is imminent that I don't know. There is it does kind of light my fire a little bit. So.
Yeah.
I was like, pull the plug, shut it down, man. Don't touch it again.
Yeah. So is the plan to
haven't heard
image
back.
It and put on another hard drive? Or?
Yeah, I haven't heard back from him. That's a good question because that's what he asked me. He said, where do we go from here? Because like I said, he's real savvy. He's pretty savvy. And I said, you know what I said? I think this actually belonged to this wasn't even his machine. He was doing a favor for somebody taking a look at it. And so... So, you know, I said, look, if the guy wants to spend some money, just bring it here. I'll just take care of it. Or I said, if you want to putz with it, I said, I'll help you out. And he said, new hard drive. I said, yeah, new hard drive. He said, so what do you do? You just copy one hard drive to the other. And no, I mean, I would almost never do that. It's, you know, you have Windows 7. Why just reinstall Windows 7 and then just import the data that you rescued from the failing drive? There was one situation where I did image, I think there's a couple situations, a couple times I actually did image the old drive directly to the new one, but it was an unusual situation where it was an old operating system. It was running a CNC machine or something like that. It was something very specific where it was like reinstalling just didn't even make sense that if I could image it, then I would. And that's what I liked about the... I didn't see us going this direction. The
Acronis.
No, I don't even want to guess. It's part of Magic. I'm trying to remember it's the command line Linux.
Clonezilla.
Thank you. It's Clonezilla that has the option to skip over bad sectors.
It. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, you.
I was just going to say that.
Well, there you go.
I was actually getting ready to tell you my story of the same thing.
Well, beautiful. I can't wait to hear it. But it's that to me is a lifesaver because so many times you try and image a drive, and it fails. And to me, that is the dumbest thing in the world because it's like, please overcome this small thing because half the time I'm using the imaging software, it's like I just want what's there, what you can get me. Maybe throw me some warnings. Tell me that there were bad. You know, it couldn't recover all of it or make an image of all of it. Do your best, please. And so it just fails. That's what I love about the Clonezilla is that as crude as it is in this graphical user interface world that we live in, it seems very crude. You know, but it's not. I mean, it's just command line stuff. It looks like you're using the command line. It's all text, but it's so powerful. And it has the option just to skip bad sectors. Read it, try. If you can't, move on. And so in the one situation I'm thinking about, you know, it cloned the old drive to the new one perfectly. And when it skipped the bad sectors, when I went back and reviewed what it was it couldn't copy, it was crap that didn't matter anyway. It was like stuff in the page file, stuff in the recycle, but like stupid crap that you wouldn't really even want it copied over anyway. And so it's like, so you couldn't copy that. Oh, great. You know, even better. So I really do love the Clonezilla. And I built a dedicated bench machine just for doing that sort of stuff. It's probably one of the older boards that came with SATA ports. And so it's really been... really ideal for, you know, doing that kind of work because not that I do a lot of ID drives anymore, but you know, whatever I had come in, you know, I'll just throw a disc in there with either the Clonezilla or the Spinrite or MHDD. It was just a dedicated machine for hard drive activities. So, I really fell in love with Clonezilla.
Yeah, it's a tool that I started using many years ago, and it was, I had never heard of it. We just started using it in education, and it's not pretty. You know, you mentioned command line. It does have a GUI interface to it, but the GUI interface is, it's bare bones, stripped down, very minimalistic. Okay. You know, it's not pretty at all. But I've been using it for years, and there'll be a link in the notes, and I put a link in the chat room regarding the advanced parameters for disk cloning, and the pictures are old. Unfortunately, Clonezilla doesn't keep up with their documentation very well. But what I wanted to mention is that when you're going to image a machine, I always choose expert mode. And then in there, in one of the options, about halfway through, it talks about deleting the hibernation files and the restore, the sys files that, well, it's the hibernation files, essentially. It talks about deleting the hibernation files, and I always choose that. Whenever I'm imaging a machine, I always delete the hibernation files. But also in there, just like you mentioned, Tim, was the option to skip bad sectors, or to, you know, to basically continue even if the drive starts to fail. And it will throw errors. And here's my story. So I was given a Dell N5110. Now, this, it was given to me and to repair. And basically it was, this is full of malware and spyware. My kids have been on it. Can you clean it up? Not a problem. I go to clean it up. I use D7 and Crystal Disk boots up at the very beginning of my D7. And what happens is it tells me there's a bad hard drive. Well, I already know the battery's bad, and they want me to order a new battery. So I ask him, the owner, hey, I noticed that Crystal Disk is showing a bad hard drive. Do you want to just order a new hard drive? Yes. So now I order a battery and a hard drive. Put it off to the side because I'm waiting for those two things to come in. They were supposed to be delivered on a Saturday, and I'm not sure if I shared this story, but they said they were delivered on a Saturday, and they weren't. So I waited till Tuesday. I called Amazon, called the Postal Service. They said Amazon called the Postal Service. Postal Service says it was delivered. I told Amazon I don't have it. It's not on my doorstep. Love Amazon for this reason, because you call them up and they refunded me my money and they reordered my stuff and they gave me next day shipping for free.
Fantastic.
I was blown away, because it's not their fault. It's the Postal Service's fault. So I get notice. Great. My stuff's going to be here on Wednesday. I figured my hard drive will be here before the battery is, because I can get Prime on the hard drive. So Wednesday, the hard drive shows up, but what else shows up? The original box. The Postal Service delivered it to the wrong door. So now I have the original order with the battery and the hard drive, and I have a new order of the battery and the hard drive coming to me. It's like, okay. So I send back the second hard drive, because I need the first hard drive, and I just received the battery yesterday, and I sent back the battery, the replacement battery. Well, of course, now Amazon is crediting me stuff that they've already credited me for.
Right, right.
So I'm going to end up probably making a little bit of money out of this. And it just stinks. So these Dell N5110s are the ones where the hard drive is attached to the bottom of the motherboard and there's no panel. So you have to completely take the whole thing apart. I take the whole thing apart. It was showing as a 500 gig hard drive. When I flipped the motherboard over, the hard drive said 650. And the problem with Clonezilla, this is one of the drawbacks of Clonezilla, is that you really need to image, you have to have at least the same or a bigger hard drive. That's because it does disk imaging. You can image partitions, but I've had issues with that. So I've always done a full disk image, which means that if you image a 650 gig hard drive like I did with this computer, I can't, even though I say the user only used 120 gigs of it, I have to put it on at least a 650 gig hard drive or bigger. I can't put it on a 500. It won't work.
Yeah. You have to use the same size drive or larger. You can't go from a drive to a smaller one, which isn't unusual in imaging software, at least up until recent history. I mean, that wasn't like a really strange limit. That's not a strange limitation.
No, but a lot of the new ones allow you to, because it says, oh, you're only using 120 out of 650. Well, that 120 will definitely fit on a 500.
Right. Right.
But Clonezilla.
That is a good, you know, stipulation to make, especially since you got burnt because it had some goofy hard drive in it.
Right. I'm like 650. I had never heard of that. So what I have to do, what I had to do then was go out. Now I had a 500 that was new. I have to go buy now a 750 to replace. So now I'm three hard drives in to getting this computer repaired.
You should have set the two 500s up in a raid.
I could have.
Because that would have been a very simple solution. I don't know why you didn't think of that.
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I'm going to go get the hard drive. I'm going to go get the laptop back. So got it all imaged over and it works fine. But the one thing, yeah, in Clonezilla, you can tell it to skip errors. And what I did find is that when you tell it to skip errors, it may actually throw errors on the screen. I don't know if you've ever come across that where you're imaging and all of a sudden the screen kind of goes black and there's text over the whole thing. I was busy doing something and I don't remember what it was, but I hadn't had a chance to mess with it. And it was just sitting on the bench and it was doing that, but it was making movements. And I just was like, oh, don't care right now. I'm going to let do. It eventually cleared all that and proceeded and finished. So I didn't know that because every time I've seen that, I'm like, ah, it's a hard failure. Stop. I didn't realize that you could just if Clonezilla and you come across an error, just let it be. Let it go, especially if you're telling it to force an image when there's errors on the hard drive. Because and I verify there's errors on the hard drive. I ran SpinRite and SpinRite threw an error saying it couldn't continue as well.
Yeah, it's just cussing. That's all it's doing when you're just doing all that. It's really upset that it can't read the hard drive. You know what? You've mentioned that because as you mentioned that I've run into that before. It's not unusual that I have, you know, a terabyte hard drive or something laying around that, you know, it's used or whatever, but it's available that I'll briefly just use it. And then now that I have a good image, I'll just fix the partition down to size and then copy that over to the new drive. I mean, in a pinch, it's not ideal. It's kind of an extra step, but I mean, you know, sometimes I don't feel like, you know, waiting or going out to the store or putting some money in. That is one workaround that I've had.
Yeah, there are different options when you go to image it, and there are different options in advanced when you, or called, it was called expert, when you image it and when you restore. One of the options when you do restore it is to force it on a smaller hard drive. I've had that work probably twice out of, gosh, hundreds of machines I've imaged. Because Clonezilla is my imaging program when I go to a lab and everything too. Because it's so small that I have it on a Pixieboot server.
Yeah.
And so I don't have to carry a disk around with me. I just boot right to the Pixieboot server and that works out really well. And there's a couple other things that you can do regarding forcing. I mean, there are so many options that I'm probably scratching the surface of it.
Well, and again, I think my favorite feature, well, favorite features of the thing that really drew me in was that, you know, one, it's running a Linux distro and it's running, I'm booting it from CD, but the last thing I want to do is connect a hard drive with issues to a Windows machine. Because Windows, it starts freaking out. It wants to format it. Maybe it recognizes it. You know, actually, maybe it does recognize it and you can see it, but you sense that Windows is doing stuff to it. It's wanting to index it and do all this crazy stuff. It's like, look, just stop. Don't do that. And it, I mean, there's no like no Windows button that you can press to say like, just don't do anything to it. You know, and you know, I know that booting up that disk, it's going to be minimally invasive. And the other thing is that when I have a failing hard drive, I like copying it bit by bit. And so you have that armature start at one end of the disk and it just very, very slowly sweeps in as it's copying it bit for bit. If you were copying that partition from one drive to the next, or just copying files, you've got that armature swinging madly back and forth as it's reading all those fragmented files. That's an excessive amount of work and heat generated inside there. If you can avoid it, that's good. This is a failing hard drive, so you know to get what I need off of it while asking as little as possible for the drive, that makes me very happy. So that's not just a Clonezilla thing. If you're imaging anything, bit bit for bit with any software, that's what's going to happen. But you know, but that's just a point that I'm making. That's one thing that I am looking for as I'm cloning that drive. I like to do the bit by bit. So free, and it's free. It's free.
Right. I've only done the bit by bit when CloneZilla can't read what kind of file system it is. So if you have a TrueCrypted drive that you need to clone. Yeah. It can't read TrueCrypt, of course, and so it defaults to a bit by bit. But if it's, you know, EX4 or NTFS or FAT or FAT32 or whatever, it will clone those a little bit faster. But you actively choose the option to go bit by bit.
I like bit by bit,
but it does take a long time or a longer time.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
Is that the, I mean,
I don't remember how long it has taken. I don't remember it being excessive or that I was really pacing around waiting for it to finish. It's a good question though. I'll have to take a look at that.
Yeah, these images the I was looking at the screenshots of CloneZilla just to check. They're so old that it's not I can't even say, "Oh, I see what you're pointing at," but I just use the default one because it has the default one. It's three. It tries one version, if it can't it tries another, and if it, then the last final kind of I can't figure out what kind of OS this is. It is the bit by bit. But I could be wrong. I'll have to spin up my CloneZilla and take a look at it.
What do you mean? What's old about this? You say that this is old.
So if you go to if you're in CloneZilla and you go to their screenshots.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Yeah.
When you go down to start CloneZilla and then it tells you the device image or the device drive and then whether you're gonna then it, the next image of course is where you're gonna save it, a local SSH, a Samba server, something like that. And then what are you gonna do? Save a disk, restore a disk. The next image after that is what type you should use. And it jumps to these old Chinese looking screenshots. Like it's not a full walkthrough screenshot.
I see.
But I don't think they update their page too much. I think they which is
no, but you know what? I think the disk I'm using I burned several years ago. So
that's yeah. Well, that's the thing is that
if they update it, might be useless to me.
You know, I kind of have a tendency to be bleeding edge a little bit too much, and so what happens is I actually created an image with a CD because I didn't have my Pixieboot server. Yeah. Then I came home, put on my Pixieboot server, and it wouldn't copy it correctly because there was a version issue wrong issue.
I see.
So, gotcha. It's almost as if, you know, when you're working on a Linux box, it's okay to be a couple of versions behind. But I've never, when the one that I've always chosen when I go to CloneZilla and go to the live one is I've always chosen the, alternative stable. And that's, and I think it's based on Ubuntu. The stable version is based on Debian. So you have your two different distros where they're based on. And I've had better luck with the Ubuntu based ones, especially when dealing with USB mice and keyboard.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because for a long time there, CloneZilla, if you had a USB keyboard or mouse in, it didn't recognize them.
Right.
And if you don't, and any new machines don't, there's no PS2 ports, or there aren't any PS2 ports. Sorry about my English there. And so, You kind of get hosed. That box that Mitch is always giving bad time about behind me there, that actually has a PS2 port on it, and that's kind of why it's my testing rig, because I can put a whole bunch of hard drives in it. And
that's a good point, because you know, I didn't really think about, I've never really had to think too much about the different versions. You know, because it's like I have a dedicated machine and I have a handful of disks and everything works, and so yeah, but you know what? There have been a handful of times. Maybe I was on site or whatever. Maybe I'd fire that up, and it would be, I'd be like, oh, okay, what's going on here? There's something's not right, and I would just move on to step B or whatever. I'd just move along. But that, I guess, having dedicated hardware and the software, it's not like I have to update it often as long as it's still working. And that, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Love me some CloneZilla.
And I've tried other Windows ones, but, and everybody, you know, CloneZilla is just a preference. It's not really, you know, I another people, Highlander in the chat says he likes East US clone and partitioner.
That's, you know, but we don't want to get into, I'd rather push my partition magic than drive your Acronis, you know, cause that's kind of where these things tend to lead. And I'm like, I just step back. I'm like, look, you know, pretty much all of them do kind of the same thing. They all do it kind of the same way. I think that you just, I think you tend to fall in love with the first one that you use that actually works and does right. what you want it to do. And so I know that I've used several that I think, okay, well, they're fine, but they just don't, they don't serve my needs exactly as I need them to. So yeah, that's, I not that I would discourage any suggestions. And actually those, the easiest one that he mentioned, that's one that's come up. That's a boomerang here at Podnuts. I mean, it just keeps coming up over and over and over again. So,
well, and you know, one of the things that, you know, you hear a lot on Podnuts, whether it's us or Dor or Jeff Hallish, is that you hear that, you know, use what works well for you. There's no right. There's no wrong. I've just used Clonezilla for so many years that I can fly through it.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's easy for me because I've used it. I'm comfortable with it. I know what it does and I know what it doesn't do. It has its pluses and minuses, but you know, does what it does outweigh what it doesn't do? For me, yes. And that's what I use.
Oh yeah. I'm not suggesting at all. It's the end all be all. It's actually a very unique solution for a very unique situation. But, I'm not here selling it. I'm just actually kind of describing where I'm using it. And that's in a failing hard drive. Bam, I just slap it in, slap a new one in. It's just bam, bam, bam. And so that's in that particular situation. I think it's awesome. I mean, if anybody's aware of something in that particular situation that's even better, let me know because I'm always looking for something better. But it's small and it's light and it just and I've had just success after success after success with it in very unique situations. Don't send hate mail. Like I said, I don't get into those. I don't, you know, not I don't the whole Apple Microsoft thing. I just my eyes just roll back in my head when people start that. And it's just look for Chevy, whatever. I can't get into that.
Yeah. So last Wednesday, I was, I had a job shadow help me one time. And I think it was just him just kind of hanging out with me, not really doing, wasn't taking any notes or anything. He was just hanging out with me and it was fun. We had a good time. Well, he's been asking to, you know, to go back on another job shadow with me. And this time last Wednesday, I said, I need to, you know, I'm going to the school and then I'm going to go fix crypto prevent on a computer. Then I got to go image another, but move data from one computer to another. So I've got stuff to do. You want to join along? He says, yeah. This time he brought documentation. So this was more of his, the school project job shadow. And apparently he had a job shadow, a couple other different jobs. In different industries. And so, you know, he's asking me the questions like, what do you like the most? What's the average salary? What don't you like? You know, what's your favorite part? You know,
this guy that I have to do a show with, I can't stand him.
Yeah. So, nah. So, but what was good though, is he got a chance to kind of see everything. I didn't even hear what you said. I was talking. I'm sorry.
It was just BS. Go on.
He got a chance to see kind of everything. So I picked him up. We went down, couldn't install crypto prevent on a computer because the user didn't have administrative rights, you know, in and out in minutes, done, headed up to go to another job, done. So he got a chance to see, you know, just kind of busting out jobs really quick. And then we went to one job and this was a 4-hour job. It just took forever. I got a new computer. His PST wouldn't copyright. He wanted it as archive because he was using now Google Mail, which was fine, but it just wouldn't go. I brought my 2 terabyte USB drive with me, and this computer that he was transferring from was a fairly new computer. It was just so old and so slow. 4 hours later, you know, he's the guy job shadowing me. He's got his head down on the chair and he starts to jerk and I'm like, hello? And he's like, oh, sorry. He's fallen asleep.
Nice.
You know, on the way home, because I was taking him back to his school after all this, on the way home, it's raining, it's dark, I'm driving, I hear the seat go back, and he's out sleeping on the freeway.
This is a kid, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I just got a kick out. He was fun. It was fine, but I was good though. I mean, I didn't like sitting here at this one job for 4 hours. I made good money, but I didn't want to, you know, nobody wants to sit there for 4 hours and watch data transfer and go, well, I'm, you know, 60 miles from home. It's not like I can go back to my office and then come back. So he got to kind of see the good and the bad. I don't know if this is his career he's ever going to get into, but, those 4-hour ones don't usually take that long.
You know what? Now, Don't worry about that. Oh, the poor kid. Oh, he had to sit for 4 hours. You know what? When I was a kid, I was pushing a mower and detasseling corn. I think he's going to live. Seriously. Come on. He had to sit for 4 hours. Oh, the poor kid. Oh, give me a break. I'm serious.
He's a good kid.
Well, good. I'm glad he just had to sit there and do nothing. My heart's breaking over here. You know what I mean? Come on, Martin.
I hear what you're saying. I know. So that was last Wednesday. It was good. And then I had to run back and finish some other computer jobs after, because he had to get back. So I had to take him back and then turn around and go back the opposite direction, get some stuff done. But, you know, of the last couple of weeks where it's been just, I've been so slammed lately, I'm going to knock on my desk here. Things have been manageable. It's been really nice to just be able to like have a lunch, take a break, you know? So I've been enjoying that. I had a couple. So the one thing that did happen over the, over this week was last week we had talked about the Dell computer that I had where they had moved it, put it back, and they hit the power button and nothing happened. I brought it home or brought it to my bench, unplugged the front USB headers, and remember it spun up. Everything worked fine. I took it back. It worked just fine. They then moved it again because they needed to lay. The first time it was painting. Now it's new carpet. It broke again. Wouldn't even spin up. So I went down there yesterday, picked it up, and this time I thought, you know, either I'm going to have to replace the motherboard or something. This is getting to be too much. Well, I went ahead and threw out to all the guys on the tech, you know, stuff within Voxer. And Liam had mentioned, you know, check the dust because maybe there's a short somewhere. Maybe the dust had caused short or if it's really dusty. This computer wasn't really dusty. I couldn't find any screws. The case is riveted on the back, so I couldn't get to the motherboard very easy without actually taking off the motherboard out of the case. So I went ahead, cleaned it out, plugged everything back in, took it down there, and it worked just fine today. So now that it's there, the carpet's painted, the carpet's done, paint, maybe they just won't touch it, and we'll see. But I still don't have a clue why it stopped working and then started back up, depending on whether or not the front USB headers were plugged into the motherboard. Other than I can think of that the motherboard is maybe starting to fail.
I know you looked it over. You blew the dust out the first time. I know you cleaned it out. And, of course, this no leaking caps, no nothing like that?
Nope.
Yeah, okay. You researched that and you discovered, I mean, that's how you knew to do that, right? So, what?
Yeah.
I know that a lot of times when I'm researching something and I find somebody who offers a solution, especially if it's repeatedly in different places, I'm satisfied. I usually don't investigate the why so often. It's like, okay, so I do this and it works fine. But did you happen to notice that? Did anybody ever say you have to do this because this happens and this is why? Did they ever get into any of that?
No.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm wondering, like I said, people ask me why all the time, why this happened. I say, look, I just fix them. I'm not CSI. You know, which just sounds really obnoxious, but I go on to say, I'll gladly, you know, if you pay me, I'll gladly research it out for you and tell you all about, oh, no, that's all right. That's all right. You know, right. So, they want to know about it as badly as I do, but so, you know, it's always the what, it's the how, but the why usually don't get into so much. So I'm curious. Which model was that again?
I'd have to look it up.
Send it to me.
I'll have to look it up. So I have some notes on it. I've got the model number and stuff, but, it's about 4 years old. So it's not a new computer, but it's not, you know, when it runs great. It just doesn't turn on sometimes.
Yeah.
So, oh well.
Interesting. How about, you know what? How about if, it gets unplugged and moved, and then when it gets moved back and plugged back in, it doesn't want to turn on.
Right. So
when it's plugged in, I'm wondering if it's a power issue.
Well, I put a new power, you tested with a new power supply, same thing. That was one of the first thoughts.
Okay, that's right. Okay, all right.
I checked the caps, I couldn't see any short, so I blew it out. I mean, this is one of those computers where when I had it here at my office, I didn't blow it out the first time because it wasn't really dusty. I mean, there's a little bit of dust in it, but it wasn't, you know, I've seen hundreds times worse.
Right.
And, you know, it's the hundred times worse ones that just keep chugging along and won't ever die. You get one little speck of dust and it throws the whole things out of whack on this one. So I'm not sure.
You know what I like about this situation is that it absolves the painters, or whoever was, were they painters first? Were they were first? Or the carpet? Who was first?
Well, the paint was first, but the local janitor or the local maintenance guy was the guy who moved
it. Okay, all right. Because this pretty much absolves him of this, right? I mean, it's not like he kicked it over or did something to it. It's clearly something with the machine because we've now had the same situation but with different people. Or did he move it this both times?
Right. And the new manager there is the one who moved it back and it wouldn't start.
It's probably not the workman.
Right. And I could replicate the issue here. I would plug things in and it wouldn't start. I'd unplug them, they would start. I'd turn it off, plug it back in, it would start. I'm like, I couldn't find any rhyme or reason.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Good one.
So shy of replacing the motherboard and trying that, one of the options that Liam had mentioned was maybe a short somewhere and that I should look at getting a new case.
At this point, it's a new computer. I mean.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Is it right now, either we're going to go with a new motherboard or a new computer. And while it's working, we're going to just let it work. I think the third time it goes, I'm going to call I'll call the manager and we'll probably go from that. So
just put it on a UPS and never turn it off.
Yeah.
And if it needs moved, just unplug that UPS.
Just move the whole building.
Just get a small UPS and just put it inside the case and
never ever turn this off.
No. Just disconnect the header for the on off button.
Just leave a paperclip in there so I can touch the two prongs to get it to start up.
I got several here like that.
I haven't done that in years.
Go into BIOS and just set it to last state if during a power loss. So if the power goes out, it should automatically turn itself back on in case the power goes out. It's the always on machine.
That's right.
Because you never have a problem until it goes off.
Right.
You know, speaking of that, that kind of reminds me of something. I'm changing the subject here a little bit. Was there anything else about that you wanted to touch on?
Kind of given an update of that nothing has been solved, but yet it's working.
It's still kind of a mystery. I read this a couple years ago. I'm sure they still do it this way, but I found this fascinating that when the, crime scene tech guys, I'm kind of lost all of a sudden for their job title, but
the forensic guys,
yeah, the forensic guys. When they got a computer on site, somebody's house, like they got some really filthy nasty dude who's doing filthy nasty things with this computer, and they need that for forensic analysis for evidence. You know, they go in and it's on and it's logged in or whatever, and they don't want to shut it off. Because they shut it off, they get it back to the shop, and they want it as it is. They don't want it turned off. And so they kind of, as I was reading this, I was fascinated. It's all very simple, but in my mind, I don't know why it was such a hurdle for me to imagine how it was they moved the thing without turning it off. And so they have they basically have a UPS that, as you imagine a receptacle computer is plugged into. Well, that UPS actually plugs into another receptacle, and it backfeeds power through the receptacle to the machine. As the for example, if it was a surge protector or something, I suppose it's that you just unplug it, and then it would backfeed to the computer and power it. But if the computer is plugged into the wall, that receptacle probably a second receptacle there, and plug the UPS into it. And as that receptacle is disconnected, they just cut it out, wires and all from the wall mount box. And so what you have as they're loading this thing in the van, driving away with it, there's the computer, the cable running out into the receptacle that used to be installed in the wall with some wires hanging from it that they cut loose, and then plugged in the other spot in that receptacle is the cable going to the special UPS. And that to me is, it's so simple. I mean, I should have just be able to picture that. Like, oh yeah, that's how they do that. But it's pretty brilliant. I would love to see I would love to see that happen. Like actually go in and raid it and do all this. But that kind of reminded me of that talk about UPSs and that. And that's what you need. You need a forensic grade UPS to backfeed that machine should the power ever go out, and if it's ever moved again, they can just cut the receptacle from the wall and just move it, Martin.
I'm on it. I actually, it's probably a little expensive.
Are they? Probably.
Well, it's got it's got one of those you know, call us for the price.
Oh, look at you. I tell you, you're like the man looking this stuff up. I come up with just crazy, dark, dusty parts of my mind, and you have a link. I'm amazed. You're the best, dude. So,
yeah, there's a link in the show notes, and I just put a link in the chat that actually has a YouTube video of them pulling the wall socket out, cutting it, and moving the transfer, doing everything. So,
yeah, if we have any listeners that do this forensically, call us, email us. Just let us know that you do it. I would love to know that we have like listeners do that. But if you have a story you'd like to tell or anything, I mean, that's I'm truly fascinated with the forensic end of this, and you know, I love data recovery if I have a bad drive, you know, and so, which is only a very small taste of what, you know, I know that is done forensically. But if we have any listeners that do that and you'd like to just let us know, make a comment or something, even if something that you don't want read on the air, that's fine. But, that to me sounds like a very exciting end of work, I think. I suppose it's not. It's like probably like anything after a week or two, you're like, eh, but, you know, just more blood splatter on my data, but.
Right. Well, I've actually met a couple of those the CSI, the FBI agents here in Portland.
Why?
Did
they come raid your house?
No. No, I was at a conference.
Did they knock on your door?
No, I was at a conference one time, and two guys showed up, and one was a civilian.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm listening.
I was on the good side of the. I was on the good side of the
white hat side. All right.
That's right. No, they showed up, and one was an FBI agent, went through the academy, and everything, and the other one was an FBI agent, but he did not go through the academy, and he was computer forensics. But both of them dealt with that because there's a big lab up here in Portland that handles a lot of Oregon's computer crimes.
Interesting.
I was trying to see if Mitch was still in the chat because we do have some emails and they go back to Windows 8, what he was talking about.
Ooh.
So the first one is from it's PAGOFF, and I have no idea how to pronounce that. But it says Microsoft has made available the ISO for 8.1, and it's reported it will work with the Windows 8 passcode. I haven't used it myself, but they say it will work here, and there's a link in the notes.
Good.
And then there's one from Jonathan West, and this one's a little bit longer, but it says, Mitch mentioned trying to do a fresh install of 8.1 on a pink Sony Vaio. I use product key 64-bit image most of the time, and sometimes RW everything. Oh, I'm not sure what that meant. The only time I've had it not work on the 8.1 with Bing based on Dell PC. Two of them, everything else it has worked on. I'm sure you mentioned these tools before, but they do work well. With the Bing installations, I've always required me to get a media from the PC manufacturer. You know where I can gain access legally? If you know where I can gain access legally, of course, a copy of that software, that would be great. When I have to do a fresh install, Nuke and Pave, I use these tools to recover the keys. When I'm doing a fresh install, I use the generic Windows 8/8.1 keys and then activate with the PC's built-in key after. I've had 99% success, the only exception being the two Dell PCs, and those are the Dell PCs with the Bing built-in. Hope this saves Mitch a headache in the future. I don't know if any of you use Evernote, but I have lots of detailed Evernote notes that might be helpful. If this is something you'd like me to share via email, just reply back and let me know. So the two links he puts in are one from Nearsoft, which does a lot of key finding tools, and the other one is RW everything. That's what the up in the text he talks about. So RW everything. He says, "P.S. These are generic install keys at the PCS Pro versions of 8.8.1. Make sure you use that key. Also, it won't authenticate otherwise. I commonly use these procedures to do a fresh install over Windows 8.8.1. Also, it will work if the original installation is 8 and you proceed to install a Nuke and Pave with 8.1." I've never used a single language. Core is standard. Windows Pro is Pro, of course. And then he talks about going through some stuff. So, but yes, that's from Jonathan West. So it sounds like a lot of people have, or at least two have issues or had fixes for Mitch's reinstallation issues that he's had with Windows 8 and 8.1. I have my in-law's computer, and that's 8 and 8.1. But I don't, or 8.1, and so. We'll see. It's brand new, so I haven't had to do anything with it yet. But at some point, I probably will end up having to learn how to reload it.
Hey, Martin, read that part about, did he just mention RW everything, or did he kind of touch on what it does?
He says I use product key and sometimes RW everything. So product key is from Nearsoft, and RW everything is also another tool.
Okay, all right.
So I don't.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that one. And I'm looking at rweverything.com and I'm not quite sure what it does, but it looks interesting.
Oh, okay. So, okay. What it does is it's a utility, access almost all the computer hardware, including PCI, PCI Express, PCI index data, memory index data, IO space. So it just grabs all of the data, and probably what it looks like it just gives you a screenshot with all of the information that is inside of your computer. Something like, I can't even think of the one. Bright, no. Anyways, there's another one out there that I used to use. I want to say Brightech, but I know that's not the right one. Oh, nope, I lost it again.
Yeah, it just looks like all it's hex data captured from everything. I mean, it's I don't okay. So
maybe,
I'm gonna
maybe that's
take a look at that. It looks interesting.
So maybe that's where he gets the keys. See, you have to tell it to search, and then he searches for it within the hex data for keys.
Okay,
I don't know. But it sounds like, so if we want more information, he says he has some notes on that. One of the things, actually, I just thought about this. One of the things that I did run into was I have at the school, for some reason, all of a sudden, they have a scanner, copier, faxer kind of all in one. And it emails out. It will scan to email. And all of a sudden, it just stopped working. So it goes out. It was going out port 26. And I was there and I tested it, and I got failures, tested it again. It came back. So it was really sporadic. So one of the questions was that I thought to myself was, well, is port 25 or 26 or 465 or 587 being blocked by the router? The router that I've configured. You know, I thought, well, maybe something's happened. So I came across two links. One is how to send email from a command line with external SMTP server on Linux. And the other one is how to send an email using Telnet for Windows. So you can, with both of these tools, will allow you to test just with, or how-tos will show you how to test email right from the command line. And I was able to test email right from the command line, and it went out just fine. So I knew the port wasn't blocked, and now I'm back to searching for within the Konica, printer to figure out what's going on. But yeah, so if you guys ever run into that issue, check that out. And then one of the things that I did forget to mention in regards to pulling keys. Now, I have not ran D7 on or D7.2 on a Windows 8 machine. No, I have. I don't remember if it pulled the keys or not. I'd have to go. It does. So D7.2 are one of the tools that I have just been using over and over and over again. I don't know. I feel like I use it daily now. I there's always a reason to run it. There's always a tool in D7.2 that I need, whether it's, last week I was at a site where they needed office keys. They lost their office keys and they needed to know which computer had what office keys, because they had the keys, but the data had moved and they had them all in folders and the folders weren't right. So we basically, one of the tasks coming up to me is that I have to go through every computer and basically run D7. I'll get it running. I'm not going to need it to do scans or make any changes. There's nothing broken with the computers, but in the process of its initial scanning, and then it creates a report when I'm done with it and it sends it back to me, it has the office keys. And so it'll pull Windows keys, office keys. It will pull, it pulls a lot of information. So if you have D7 or are using D7, you may be able to use that right on Windows 8 as well to pull your media keys from there. And it also pulls office keys. It pulls, D7 will pull things like your wireless SSID and password if it's logged on your machine. That's kind of freaky. First time I saw that. I was given a computer. I have talked about this gentleman in the past, and he fully admits he's got a Windows XP. He's the guy who has a Windows XP machine who doesn't want to go to Windows 7 because there's an 8-bit or the 16-bit DOS-based program that he has to use. And that was that's one of the things that we first started when we talked about the DOS box. And this guy will fully admit, he goes, well, sometimes I don't surf the best sites. And then his computer gets infected.
Oh my gosh. Hey, somebody that's honest, I don't believe it. That never happens.
I know.
Yes, doctor, I do eat 10 Twinkies every day and drink a 2-liter of Coke. Yeah, I do. Deal with it. All right. So, it's about time somebody stood up and just said, oh, yeah, you know what? That's what I do. It's mine. I own it. I'm doing whatever I want. Fine. I respect that. Gosh.
So last September, he, well, Windows XP faded away. Microsoft Security Essentials didn't work anymore. I put Avast on. Avast was just slowing his system down tremendously. The system is really slow. So he was out on a business trip. His wife was there. I just took all antivirus off his computer. I said, he's got to work. So I took all antivirus off of his computer and I said, you know, when you get back in, contact me. We'll throw my managed services, you know, the GFI on there, and we'll get that up and running. And I hadn't heard from him until the other day. I called, checked in with him, and he says, oh yeah, my computer crashed a long time ago. It's just sitting there. I don't use it anymore because it's hosed. So I meet with his wife today. I have his system here. And the first thing I do is throw D7 on there because I want to be able to clean out temp files, internet history. I want to be able to run, you know, JRT, ADW cleaner. I mean, all of these tools that I know that I have a feeling his computer's all infected with conduit and my search bar and just everything that we always run into all the time. And so I load up D7.2. It's gone. The disk checking tool. Crystal Disk runs.
Yes.
I see an error on his hard drive, so I'm going to be working on scanning the hard drive, fixing that. But his computer's clean. There's nothing. I don't know. I ran JRT, nothing. ADW Cleaner had like found a cookie or so. So I'm going to take it back to his wife tomorrow and say, I don't know why it's slow. I have a feeling that it's locked up, meaning the mouse won't work because it's a wireless mouse and he didn't change the battery. So he puts the computer aside and he's using his wife's. So I get there today and so now I'm looking at his wife's computer.
Go to the library, dude.
Conduit's on that. And actually the search engine is Conduit. It's got a fake Chrome browser on it. It has a fake, AV scanner on
fake Chrome. It was called Reynolds Wrap.
So I told his wife, I said, when I'm done with this computer, we're really going to need to clean that computer up. And so she's going to push for him to go ahead and use the managed services and keep him all clean. Oh, but he's gone for the month down in Los Angeles. But he is, I was kind of taken back and surprised that somebody pretty much said, yeah, I know why it's infected. It's because I went to this site. And I'm like,
thank you.
That'll do it.
Oh, you make my life so much easier. Thank you. So, you know what? But there are people. There's users like that. They literally should have computers on just like on a disposable towel dispenser. Like they just pull a computer out and use it and throw it away. I mean, there's a market for that. I seriously.
I think they're called iPads. Nothing. All right. Somebody in the future will be laughing at that joke on a podcast.
It's kind of expensive. I'm thinking.
And future listener, I thank you.
As do I, because I don't expect anybody to be listening to this much farther in the future.
Oh, come on. Oh, man. This is 140. We're going to hit 280 easily.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. All right. Well, next.
Next. LastPass.
Oh,
LastPass. Love LastPass. LastPass, the blog that came out today, says the 5 reasons to give the gift of LastPass. Number one, eliminate password stress. Number two, go anywhere, access to logins and notes. Number three, simplified collaboration with their shared family folder. Number four, more multi-factor authentication options. It supports over 10 multi-factor options. I didn't know that. And then of course, show your support. It says auto password change. Here's something. So we bought my wife a new phone the other night. She went in, she's had an iPhone 4 forever and it's now dying. And so we went in and she was looking at an iPhone 6. She was looking, we were there for a while. She was looking and humming and hawing. She doesn't want a bigger phone. She doesn't like the size of my Galaxy S4. So she wanted something smaller. Well, Samsung came out with a smaller phone. And is it the Ultra Samsung? Oh, shoot. I gotta look it up. I have somebody help me out if you're in the chat room. Gosh. I don't know. It's a smaller phone. It's about the size of an iPhone. I got nothing. It's completely gone. But anyways, so she now uses that phone. And it has all the new Samsung stuff, like the fingerprint reader and all of that. It's got a heart rate monitor on it and, It's pretty nice. And the screen is absolutely, I'm really impressed with the screen. One of the things that I was talking to Dor about was, cause I'm looking at getting another phone. I'll get to that story in a minute. But one of the things that LastPass will do is it will actually work with your finger swiper on the phone as your authentication, as your password.
Okay.
So I'm working on getting my wife to use LastPass because I store a lot of stuff in there for like our banking and kids accounts for like their school. But my wife doesn't have those. And so now, because I would have to set her up and she would have to remember a password, and while she could do that, she's really going to enjoy the fact that I can set her up in LastPass. I can share data with the LastPass family folder where it says you can drag and drop notes right into there. It syncs automatically with everybody that you can give her access to that folder. So there's no reason for my wife to have my client information, you know, because I have that backed up and put in a safe in case something happens to me. She can get there. You know, my clients will still be safe, but I can share data and now she can just swipe her finger and access it. So between the swipe and something like Google Authenticator, then you're going to be, I feel like that's a great, bonus, especially for her phone.
What happens? Is there an alt? With that, is it, it checks your fingerprint, or you can do this other thing in either way, that accepts it, or is it like you have to show it your thumbprint and that's it, or fingerprint or whatever?
Well,
you know what I mean? Like, let's say something breaks with the phone and for whatever, or your finger, I don't know. I mean, just some situation where that just stops working. So is there like an alternative, you know, am I asking that right? Does that make sense?
No. Yeah, that makes sense. Most finger swiping applications, and I've seen these on computers, what happens is when you go to set up the finger swipe, you actually assign that swipe to a password. So you can, if the swipe itself doesn't work, you can type in a password.
Okay, all right.
Because all the swipe is doing is it's an automated password. It just spits out the password for you.
I understand. That makes sense. Okay. You know what? Now I can picture that. See, I've never set that up or really messed with it. That makes a lot of sense. I was just thinking, because I get a lot of stuff in with broken screens. And so, you know, I know that on my own stuff, you know, I set up, remote software. So I can actually I can bring up a browser window at my computer and log into it remotely and, you know, control it that way, which is extremely handy for, pulling data off of it or doing wiping it, you know, because that's a major concern for a lot of people because they're like, I got this phone and I can't see the screen or it doesn't respond to touch. But I don't want to turn it in or do whatever with it because I can't wipe it. And so, I was just wondering if you were logging in remotely, but yeah, I mean, yeah, you're telling me that there is a workaround there.
Yeah. I'm still trying to find out what that phone was called. It's driving me nuts. It's just not a big phone. Alpha, that's it. It's the Samsung Galaxy Alpha. So it's smaller. Instead of a 5.7 display, it's a 4.7 display. So it's a little smaller.
And she's going from an iPhone to this, right?
Or she's going from an iPhone to this. And really, so
tell us how that goes.
Yeah. I think there was a couple things that kind of put it over the edge. She loves to listen to music and the whole iTunes thing. She's just kind of tired of that. This way we can just plug it in. And they were having a sale and there was a sale where you got you got their Tab 4, which is their Samsung Galaxy Tab tablet, for 99 cents. It has cellular built in. So it has the 4G built into it. And that's a $10 a month. But at home, we just turn that off and we're going to have to pay for it, but turn it off. So it's just wireless. So that's not counting against what's not going to take our pool of phones, but it is so crisp and so clean. And she's so between being able to move music over easier and between being able to, getting this tablet that she was working last night and it was up and she was watching TV on it. Like she was so excited about that and being able to play Words with Friends on a bigger screen. I think that was the selling point that really kind of put her over the edge. And she said, okay, that's the phone I want.
Well, coming from an iPhone 4.
Right.
That's my gosh, that's not much bigger than these watches dudes are wearing now.
Right.
That really is, you know, it's amazing because when that phone came out, it was like, oh, okay, this is the phone and this is what it is. And it seemed perfectly adequate. Oh, no way. You pick one up now and I haven't got that much older in the last year or two. I mean, it's like, I can't barely see it. I'm like, oh my gosh. And I tell you what, without swipe, or a swipe type, you know, predictive, you know, text kind of entering thing, you know, you're sitting there, you're punching the buttons individually. It's like, this is the most, now, I mean, I'm not saying they get against Apple, you know, I'm comparing current technology to something a few years ago. So this is just a kind of a comment on where we've, how far we've come. It's just so awfully painful. Oh my gosh. So yeah, you know what, coming from that phone, which was, it was a grand phone when it was new. I'll tell you what, still take that, that phone took amazing pictures. It had a really great camera. Took beautiful pictures. That was one thing I was always amazed about, that about the iPhone 4, and it was, it, you know, except for the fact it was made of glass front and back, it was a nice solid device. You know, anything is going to be amazing as far as screen size. Good for her. You know what? I hope she loves it, and I look forward. Actually, I look forward to hearing what works and what doesn't work, and actually, what I look forward to hearing questions that or solutions that she needs. That you provide, because that's often where I find myself with my customers. And here at home, is that, you know, the kids, my wife, they bring me something, they're like, here, it used to do this, now it doesn't, or I want it to do this and it doesn't. And so just that sort of thing. I look forward to hearing those types of stories. Actually, you know what? I completely forgot, but I installed a custom ROM on my wife's phone. That should be, I'll tell you what, let's give that in our week December, because it's, we're still kind of hashing out some of the last little issues, but that's actually gone really well.
Very nice. Yeah, I'll have to. So I'm in the market. Like I said, I'm in the market a new phone. I may be leaning over to the Samsung Galaxy S5. It's pretty nice. The one thing for me, I was actually with my wife in the store. I had a Moto X in my hand. They already provisioned it. It was ringing. I was texting on it. I was using Voxer.
He was
on
leaving. He was going out the door with. It was his phone.
It was my phone, and I have a micro SD card that has my podcast, my pictures, not my pictures because they're usually backed up, but all my music and some stuff on it. And the guy selling me the Moto X was like getting everything ready, because the Moto G has a micro SD slot. So he was getting ready with the Moto X. The Moto X does not have a micro SD slot. It has 16 gigs of onboard memory, and that's it.
So it's just, so that's truly inadequate.
I had to basically get my phone back. And because I was determined I was going to get a Moto X. I liked the reviews about it. I was really excited about it. So I'm probably end up going to sticking with the Samsung phone. It will be my next purchase. And I didn't even know the problem I have with the Samsung is the TouchWiz interface, and that's Samsung's overlay on Android. And I didn't even know about launchers. You know, you can change your launchers. There's one called Novo. I talked to Dor about it, and he goes, "Oh, I use the Google one." So I went to the App Store. Sure enough, there's a Google launcher. You install it. Ta-da! And now it activates and it runs. When you pick up the phone, you can just say, "Okay, Google," instead of the Samsung that you have to say, "Okay, hi, how, Galaxy, how you doing?" And then you can mess with it. Like, it's backwards.
You actually have to have small talk.
You do. You gotta like talk nice to your phone.
How's your fiscal week been, phone? My battery's run kind of hot. My aching battery is running hot. So, your breast stinks. Come on, man. Can I use you now?
So that's I think I'm going to be moving over to that. And then I'll have some more information about LastPass and the integration with mobile. I worked, so some of our listeners may know, they may not know. I worked for many years in education before I left and started doing Obando computing full time, both in school districts in California and then also in what are called educational service districts, which kind of oversee school districts, and they help out from a state point of view. They help out, whereas a school district, I was kind of hands on the ground within a school district and for many years. So I have experienced both sides of that. Coming from the Herald Tribune out of Florida. The title is District Worker Accused of Causing Computer Problems. And
causing computer problems.
That's
every user.
Right. Right.
What makes this guy? What did this guy do?
Okay. It says a Sarasota County Schools employee has been arrested and accused of uploading an unauthorized software program that has caused widespread computer problems for the district last month. Now, I get it. If this is a district employee or school employee and he's not allowed to install any applications that are not valid applications, I get it. I understand that. So they arrested him. He caused the school more than $100,000.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah. I mean, so what, you know, what could he have installed that would have caused so much heartache and so much damage? C-Cleaner.
What?
He said that they had installed C-Cleaner, and shortly after that, then they had breaches and they had network outages. And so what their point is that C-Cleaner is a cleaning tool, and therefore it will erase traces of online activity. Now, I've used C-Cleaner before to clean up temp files, to clean. I mean, it's my go-to for cleaning up systems. I use it to clean up temp files for registry entries. You know, I use it along with other tools. And yes, it can destroy stuff, but from my experience is that it almost works. It's very lenient in what it destroys. I feel like it's not
aggressive.
Takes away it. Thank you. It's not aggressive.
Our listeners know this. It's not aggressive. If even some of the most mundane things it does, it tells you or it asks you first, or it prompts you to back up setting or things that you're doing. Are you sure you want to do this? You know, I mean, first time, like you click checkbox, don't tell me this again. But even as it's working, you never feel like you're about to do something you can't recover from. It's and I've used it a million times. I don't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead. Yeah, I mean, it's not aggressive at all.
Right. Well, so, apparently it sounds like the apple doesn't far too fall from the tree in this case, because his dad used C-Cleaner and wiped out 11,000 files from the former sheriff in 2009. And so the new sheriff was coming in, they needed some stuff, and he wiped it out. Now, C-Cleaner does have the new versions of C-Cleaner does have the erase function, but it's not on. You know how you can go in there, you can do like a hard drive erase?
Like, well, it overwrites, it kind of like a D-ban. Like it's overriding the drive where, you know, there's no current data stored, so as to destroy old documents and nothing could be recovered.
Right.
I mean, C-Cleaner, it's like, yeah, sure, it destroyed all of our stuff that we were storing in the recycle bin. I mean, was it like that, or?
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like they're really trying to make, they're connecting him and his father by just the fact that they both use C-Cleaner. Now, his father may have used C-Cleaner and actually done the, I need to delete all of this information and then write over it so it can't be recovered, okay? But they never talked about how they had to send the laptop off to get it, you know, professionally recovered or anything like that. But what they're saying with this guy is that it caused major outages. The system was shut down to prevent major failures. The shutdown affected email accounts, security systems, learning systems. Like, he used C-Cleaner and, you know, somebody had caused a major meltdown within the system, which that's kind of a big leap. I don't know. I wasn't there, but from my use and your use and other people's use of C-Cleaner, it's not that aggressive unless he went in and forcefully used it to be aggressive. I mean, seriously, if you're going to be that aggressive with a tool, use something else besides C-Cleaner. D-Man works great. Just saying.
According to arrest documents, school, and it wasn't the local, I think it's interesting to point out that it says the investigation was conducted by a third-party cybersecurity firm, not the sheriff's office. It says, according to arrest documents, school computer support workers noticed a network intrusion caused by an unauthorized software update on the district's central server. The system was then shut down to prevent major failure. So, a network intrusion caused by a software update on the server. I haven't read all this. I'm not sure how C-Cleaner plays into that.
Right. It says that his laptop was examined by Silent, S-Y-L-I-N-T, which is the third party, which discovered a program called C-Cleaner, which had been installed and activated on October 21st, just a short time after the network intrusion, authorities say. So they're saying, it sounds like, well, network intrusion, then this, therefore they must be related. C-Cleaner used to remove traces of online activities. It is not used by the school district and is not authorized to be installed on equipment. In a probable cause affidavit, the sheriff's detective concluded it was an intentional and malicious act.
Are they saying that they're not blaming C-Cleaner, are they? Are they pointing at C-Cleaner as evidence that he removed evidence of his internet activities that would prove that he had done something to the school system's computers? that this was software he used to cover his tracks.
That's what it sounds like.
Oh, okay. So it's not as if they found CCleaner on a machine and that was the problem.
Well, I mean, I think it's both. It's, you can't have that. Oh, and you, and apparently there was some network intrusion and you have CCleaner, so therefore you must have been using it to cover up network tracks.
That, okay. So that's why I didn't grasp it first. That's enough evidence to suggest that he could have been involved. But you know, I hope they don't come look at, I mean, I probably have 15 examples of, there's 15 examples here in my shop that I probably did it to.
Right. I don't know. I didn't do it.
But I hope justice is done. I mean, if the guy did it, I hope that, you know, he goes out the river. But, you know, if he was messing around, but at the same time, I hope that everybody does their due diligence. You know, if the guy, obviously, I don't want anybody that's not guilty to go to jail.
Right. But we don't know what the whole situation was. I just thought it was funny that I don't know.
Actually, no, because you know what? The first page of this, man, this guy's evil and he was arrested and $100,000 and central systems and shutdowns and lost productivity. And you're like, wow. And you go to the second page and then you read CCleaner. It's like, whoa. That seems like a leaf. You wouldn't expect right. to see that. That would make me laugh.
Rabies and arms and limbs missing, and it's like the Monty Python thing. It's the killer rabbit.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Just a flesh wound.
I got better.
Well, where'd you find this?
Actually, I heard about this on the Mike Tech Show.
Okay.
Props to Mike Tech Show, Mike Smith.
Yeah, interesting.
For coming up with this one. But yeah, it was an interesting article. When he mentioned it, I went, what? Like, I got to read this article. Another thing, Google is protecting us. Dun, dun, dun. Gmail now protects your inbox from malevolent extensions. Oof. Cross-site scripting.
I'm sorry. Can I interrupt you for 1 minute? Cause I just got the third pages. It says, who's Balkwell? Is he the guy who was arrested? Who's Balkwell? I'm sorry. I don't know. I should have.
It's okay. I got to go back to.
I should have read this earlier. I'm sorry, but Balkwell is, because that's not the guy that was arrested, was it?
No, the guy arrested was Levante.
Levante. So who's Balkwell? I'm sorry.
Okay, Balkwell. Okay. Balkwell is the previous sheriff that that Levante's dad ran CCleaner on his laptop.
Okay. All right. I got this. I got this last page. It says, before Balkwell turned over his laptop, he ran the CCleaner program 5 times and scrubbed thousands of files. Okay. But that's not this guy. Okay.
No, that's following up on the last paragraph of the second page, which talks about his dad using CCleaner and covering up tracks of a sheriff.
Okay. You know what? This sounds like, the makings of an amazing movie, but
with a terrible cast.
And as the audience, I'm just not even paying attention. Now, you know, this sounds like an amazing movie, but when you get about like 20 minutes in and you're almost hooked and they say CCleaner, you're like, I think I'm going to go sit in the car, right? I mean, it's
right. I think Dancing with the Stars is on.
all right. Well, thanks for bringing that, because I'm going to look this over. It sounds like there's got to be something more to it. But CCleaner embroiled in their greatest controversy since being pulled from Nine Night. So
that's right. Paraform taken down by local school district.
Yeah,
Saratoga.
That's right.
Florida.
Well, hey, they've. I mean, look, the Pirate Bay is finally dead. Who's next? Piriform.
Oh, something I did want to mention. I just happened to check my phone. If you're a Tolkien fan, today, Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, so the very first movie is free.
Great.
In the Android app store, Android Play Store.
Yeah, I got that.
Awesome. That's right. I saw your Google Plus this morning on it. So. Yeah. I'm just rehashing.
Well, I think we both reshared it from Door. So.
Oh, well, it's a great movie and it's free. Thanks. So even if you're not going to watch it now, it's free. Take it. Get it. I'm going to watch it on my wife's new tab.
She ain't getting that back. That's going to be your new phone.
I just bought, hello? Yeah. I just bought her a case for that because she doesn't have a case. And no, she's pretty much said, that's my tablet. Because I have the Nexus 7. She's like, that's my tablet. And so I hold up my Nexus 7 screen next to hers. And I think I can almost hear my tablet like crying. And I think there's a little, it actually, I don't even have loaded a sad trombone sound on it, but I swear I heard it. So.
Great.
All right. Google, a popular service like Gmail inevitably becomes a target for hackers. Da-da-da. So today it implemented content security policy or CSP to prevent cross-site scripting attacks and malevolent browser plugins from messing with your inbox and potentially stealing your data.
Malevolent.
How come they just couldn't change that? Because there's some words that just mess me up, and that's going to be one of them. So I haven't read too much about this, but I did want to throw it out there that Google is helping to protect your Gmail, and I'm assuming for Gmail for businesses as well, for some cross-site scripting attacks within your stuff. I just saw the link in the chat, sadtrombone.com.
Yes. Click play, and you get the sad trombone. And I want to thank, once again, it was somebody from here. I don't, Dor, Liam, or one of them. That's, I don't remember who posted that first. But that's where I got it from. That's great. Actually, you know, in your, that's very useful whenever, you know, in your chats or hangouts when people are going nuts with their memes. That's, you throw that sad trombone.com in there every once in a while and
it's right when somebody's talking and you want them to be quiet. You just play that. Yeah. Well, that was my week.
Wow, man, that sounded like a week and a half. That sounded like a week and 2 hours to me.
Ooh, it was.
That was literally 2% better than I'm used to participating in.
But we're missing Mitch, so that's it goes back down.
Yeah. Well, I know. That's well.
We have to do addition and subtraction first. No, multiplication and division.
I feel like this show runs about 73-74% anyway. So plus 2, 76 minus Mitch. We still failed.
We're scraping by with a C.
I'll take it.
Hey, but that's passing in some places.
I'll take it, man.
We get to move up to the next grade.
I'll settle for
maybe
average.
We'll get a primetime spot next time.
I'll settle for average. Who wants to be above average? Those people. They're the ones that have to do everything.
I'd like to be above average.
Yeah. I like being right about average, maybe slightly under. I benefit from low expectations.
Good grief.
If everybody expects a lot, you can only disappoint.
Yes, that's anyway. True. That's true. Well, Tim, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do
that? Hey, I'm Tim Bauermeister on the G+. Hit me up there, folks. And feel free. I really do. I love the show. I enjoy doing it. I love Martin and Mitch and everybody. Well, not Fred. He was just okay. But chat room's awesome. I loved doing the live show and all the listeners. I really do appreciate all of you. And anybody wants to hit me up, please feel free anytime.
Awesome. And since Mitch is not here, I've got to remember that if people want to give us a voicemail, 7076-PODNUT, 7076-PODNUT. If they want to email us, it's geeksters@podnuts.com. I'm Martin Obando, M. Obando in the chat room. Christmas is coming. It's like, gosh, what is it, a week away? A week from tomorrow, right? No, week from Thursday. Week in 2 days. Podnuts.com/Amazon. And while you're surfing around and you're checking out stuff at Amazon, don't forget just to go to podnuts.com. Just check out some of the shows. Linux for the Rest of Us, Mobile Dynasty, it's coming back. Android App Addicts is alive and well. Jeff Hallish is kicking it on. Man, yes, he's putting out new shows. Like my RSS feed on my phone goes off, and it's another Jeff Hallish thing. I think I listen to him more than I listen to my wife sometimes. Sometimes.
Excuse me.
So,
I don't know what that was.
Have a great... I'm trying to figure out if that was real, or you were trying to tell me something.
I didn't know. No. Just observation.
All right. Well, before I dig any big of a deeper hole here, I'm going to go ahead and thank everybody for coming out and joining us. Have a great fiscal week, and don't forget to be gruntled. We'll catch you next week. Bye, guys.